session number 11210, reel 2.
Did you do any training in trench warfare, digging trenches?
Yes, when we were on the engineer's course at Stokesley.
You went on an engineer's course.
This was somewhere February, March, I think. It wasn't long before I went to France, actually.
And they were digging trenches as part of the work?
Well, we had to do an RE, communications and all that sort of thing. Water tanks, I remember, and all this. You know, there was a whole... We were there about a week, actually. Yeah, I quite enjoyed that, actually. It was a change from what we had been doing.
Did you do any manoeuvres with other arms of the service? Did you do any schemes, anything of the nature?
No. After Stokesley, I went back to... went to South Shields, to the holding battalion. And it wasn't long before we were getting ready to go to France.
At what stage were you placed into a battalion and company of the regiment?
In South Shields. We became part, I think, of my memory, we were part of the 151st, 23rd Div, 151st Brigade, if I've got it right.
70th Brigade, was it?
Yes, it was the 70th Brigade. That's quite right, yes. 10th Durham's.
What state was the battalion in at this time?
As I say, we were a mixture of conscripts, you know, militia, territorial, a lot of territorials from the Inwood area, from the Bishop Auckland area, and one or two regulars.
Were you up to strength, do you know?
Yes.
What about weapons? Were you well equipped?
Do you want the truth?
Yes.
I went to France with a 1916 Lee Enfield rifle, a billy can which fitted round the base of your back, which had a hole in it, which was no use to me, and we had the old First World War 5 pouches on either side with 50 rounds, and a bayonet that I couldn't get out of my scabbard.
Where was that? Was it rested in?
Was it? We were very badly equipped, I reckon.
So South Shields, you joined this battalion, which was part of 70th Brigade.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How long were you in South Shields?
Maybe a month, 6 weeks. I can't remember exactly. This was a period of moving around a lot. I can remember we had several... The rumours were rife about going to France because this was the phony war after the winter time, you see, and I remember going home and telling my family, or wrote and told them, I think it was going to France, but, you know, secrecy and all this pattern. We went home and my mother and father took me out to the Traveller's Rest in Burnham Peel, I remember, to a farewell do it, you know. See, my mother had lost her son and was terrified of losing me. I can understand now, being a parent myself, how my mother felt then, you see. And off I went back to South Shields, and it was pure rumour, you see. So I went back home the following weekend, and I became known as the Bad Penny because I kept turning up, you see. And we were having all these injections, you know, the usual army injections. And when the time came, you know, we were caught unawares. We left South Shields at midnight. I always remember entering the Tyne Dock.
What date was this?
Well, no wonder I go to France now. Well, wait a minute. 24th of April. Yeah, I've got it in here. 24th of April.
What had you been doing in between? Had you been doing routine training?
Well, we used to go along the beach at Harton, you know, along to Marsden. And route marching, that was basically what we did.
Who were your officers?
Well, again, my memory serves me right, because I've got some record of it somewhere. What they did then was they officers in of the Durham Light Infantry, and I think they were territorial officers, I'm not sure, went to the Essex Regiment, and we had Essex, a lieutenant, I think his name was Smith, but they were from the Essex Regiment. I don't know whether this was an interchange. I really don't know why, but they went to France with us, I can remember that, because I was captured with one of them. That's another story.
So your 10th Battalion, which company were you in?
B Company.
And do you recall your company officer, company commander?
No, I don't.
Who was the battalion commander, do you recall?
I think it was a man called Captain Greenwell, whom I've since heard about, because he lives in the area, or his family do. He's not around now, of course. But I remember the CSM was a reservist, big Scotsman he was. Oh, he was tough. Real tough. But as I say, we had 13-hour train journey to Southampton. And we were put behind barbed wire, almost like a prison camp. There was almost a riot there because we couldn't communicate. Our families didn't know anything about this.
Where was it? At Southampton?
In Southampton, yes. We weren't allowed out. Nothing.
When you say there was nearly a riot, what exactly do you mean?
Well, the men were incensed that we couldn't communicate with home or anything. It was all hush-hush, I take it then. And we got on the ship, I remember, I think it was the Daffodil, if I remember, one of these cross-channel steamers, and I can remember being given a tin of McConaghy's. That was our rations going over. And how do you open a tin of McConaghy's? Where do you use our bayonets? You know, it was... And I remember zigzagging over the channel, and we couldn't understand. And then, of course, afterward, we learned, of course, there were U-boats in the area. Because you don't think about this, you know, when you're 21, sort of thing. And we arrived in Le Havre in the early hours of the morning.
Do you recall the date?
Well, it will be the 25th, will be the next day, about the 25th, 26th of April. And as we sailed into Le Havre, I remember seeing this big ship, I think it was called the Paris, lying on its side. It burned out in the harbour. Now, whether it was sabotage, we never knew. But as we were going alongside the wharf, I could see all the lines of men in blue dungarees. And I learned after this was the French stevedore sort of uniform. And they were sitting there dangling their legs. And they were on strike. We were all shouting the Entente Cordiale and all this. And they refused to unload our... We had to unload all our guns, everything. And they put us on these open trucks, I remember this, and they took us up to a little place called Bulbeck. And years later, when I was in Blanchland, in the Abbey in Blanchland, you'll find that the white monks come from Bulbeck. And I remember the name very vividly. And I learnt more French in 2 weeks in Bulbeck than I did in 5 years at Ormond Grammar School.
So you stopped in Bulbeck for a time?
I stopped in Bulbeck for about 2 or 3 weeks.
What was your reception like with the French people in the...
Well, it was a hamlet that was, you know, outside of Bulbeck, on a farm, actually. And we were merely billeted there. We did no training at all. You know, we did route marches and all that stuff. I remember marching with the Tyneside Scottish. And if you ever want to march a long way, march to bagpipes. It was quite remarkable. That sticks in my memory, the march into the skirl of the bagpipes. It was quite something. Really enjoyed it. Then we moved right up to the front, or what we didn't know it was the front then, to a little place called Frivon. And I remember this. Now, my army career, if you want to call it that, was spent mixing concrete and laying runways for emergency aerodromes. Now that was my contribution to the war effort at that time. So the afternoon I spent cleaning my rifle out because it was full of concrete cement. And that was it. I was 4 weeks
there. Had you been told that this would be the kind of work you would be doing?
No, we had no idea. I spent... maybe I'm belittling myself here, but I was battalion orderly corporal, and then I was orderly corporal for transport, so I spent my time looking after trucks. I wish then that I'd taken a course, incidentally, in driving, because I would have passed my driving test on him. They gave me this opportunity, and I turned that down. But it showed you how well I really wasn't. My heart wasn't in being a soldier. I must be honest about this. It was my duty to my country. When the bugle sounded, I used to run like hell, as we say, down to the sergeant major's tent and stand at attention. And he used to ask me what I wanted. And I said, "Well, the bugle went." I didn't know one bugle call from another. And I was always in trouble with the poor old sergeant major. But this is when we began to realise something was on, because we noticed these dispatch riders come. I can remember this night particularly. These dispatch riders coming in and out, in and out. We knew there was something afoot.
So you must have been in for event late April, early May.
Late April, early May. About up to May the 8th.
And you were making runways.
Yeah. Do you know the tragedy of this? When I was captured, about 2 or 3 weeks later, we marched past this very same aerodrome, and guess what was on the tarmac? German aircraft. You know, it was unbelievable in such a short space of time. All that work that we did, the Germans.
Whilst you were doing this work, were you undertaking any training at Courtauld?
No, just.
Had you had any lectures about France prior to?
No.
When you were in the place.
Well, I was fortunate insofar as I knew my way around. I could speak a little French, you see.
What was the morale of the battalion like? You were supposed to be infantry soldiers, and you were just laying concrete.
Well, we were behind the lines, and we didn't know we were behind the lines in that sense, because the phony war was, we didn't. We wrote home, and we received letters from home. I think I got three payments. I've got my, three payments of 100 francs or something. But I wasn't a drinker. The men went down to the local estaminet, but I wasn't interested, and. As I say, I was on duty most of the time.
Did your officers and your NCOs, did they show any kind of patience with being what they were doing?
No. By this time, of course, I was getting a little impatient because, as I said to you earlier, I was a trained officer in the sense that I had been in the OTC in college. I had volunteered for 6 months in the ranks, and this was May, so, I felt it was time somebody was doing something about it. So I went to the commanding officer then, was a Captain Robinson. Funny enough, he came from Shotley Bridge, which is not far from where I live now. And I explained my predicament to him, and I told him, I said, I can read maps, I speak French. I said, I'm an educated man in that sense. And I said, I feel as though I'm wasting my time here. And I always remember he said to me, "Well, don't worry, I'll put you in the intelligence section of the battalion." Now, that didn't mean much to me, but to give the man his due, he took me out with him. I remember on a motorbike and sidecar, and we toured the area, and he was very good to me. And he told me, he said, "Well, I think you'll be going back to Colchester." I think that Colchester was a very big army training centre. I found that out later, of course. He says, "You'll be going back probably next month to do your officer's training course in between times."
Had your equipment improved at all?
No, I still had the same equipment. I had a respirator and this, and that was it.
What about the battalion? Were there carriers with the battalion? Was there carriers?
We had a Bren carrier. Mm-hmm. But you see, the thing, everything happened so quickly. This was the only time that I felt. Well, we use the word Fred Carno's army. I remember one day being marched out. We were under canvas, incidentally, which was pretty rough. And I was asked to disperse. I was a section commander then. I was a lance corporal, you see. And I had a platoon under my command, as you might say. And I was asked to dispose them, and disperse them, I should say. And I put them out. And Bren gun here, this and that. And this officer came up and asked me where I'd placed my men or something the other. And at the end of it, he turned around to me and he said, "You're facing the wrong way." Now, we didn't realise that we were actually, the Germans had broken through. This was about May the 10th, you remember, when the Blitz came. And we didn't realise. Now, if German tanks had come up, we wouldn't have had a clue. But of course, the infiltration of the German K Division, Rommel's, was so rapid that we didn't realise that Well, we were in no man's land, as you might say. I never fired a shot. My war effort, apart from building aerodromes, was leading refugees, leading horses and trucks and getting people off the road. It was the chaos. I've seen some of these films, you know, what was one of them, The Pied Piper, you know, and it's very true. We were strafed. You know, getting back to what we were talking about before, about aircraft. They didn't need to train us. When these Stukas came down, boy, we were in the deck, and I'm not afraid to say it, I almost filled my trousers. It was terrifying, and we were so unused and so unprepared for this.
So then when the 10th of May arrived, you were still on your airport duties?
That's right. And then we just suddenly...
And then what happened to you then?
Well,
were you Stukas then?
Oh, yes, very quickly. Well, we moved forward, I understand, because there was no communication. We knew nothing. But I understand afterwards that we were lying in reserve, I think to the Northumberland Fusiliers. I'm not sure about this. But then, of course, it was chaos after that because we got split up.
You don't recall where you moved to from for that?
Oh, yes, we went up through... place, I think it was called Beaumetz, it was south of Arras. And this was when we got lost. And this is when I kind of came into my own, as you might say, because this Lieutenant Smith, we had a young lieutenant, we had a sergeant major, and two lance corporals, and about 20 men, and one Bren gun carrier. And we were lost. We were cut off. Now, we didn't know this, as I said, the Germans had infiltrated. And we were actually behind German lines, behind enemy lines, but we didn't know it. And we had a box of ammunition, I remember, a Boyce anti-tank rifle, which we carried and lugged around with us, and none of us knew how to fire the bloody thing. I remember what we did eventually was took the firing pin out, threw it away, and threw the rifle away, because it was no use to it. We didn't know how to fire it. And on this truck, on this Bren carrier, we had, I remember, a carton of carnation milk. Do you believe this? But I can remember it quite clearly, and a box of bully beef and some ammunition. And we had to unload because we couldn't get 20 odd men on this Bren carrier and lieutenant. You know what we threw away? The ammunition, and we kept the food. No, I suppose we could have been shot for them. So but that was the chaos that we were in.
Your battalion had moved on.
They had gone. We'd lost them.
How did this happen?
Well, I really just don't know.
This was when you were moving from Frevent to your new
position? Yeah, this was when we were moving forward, you see, and of course the Germans had absolutely gone through like a hot knife through butter. And we were billeted in this farm overnight. And I can remember the farmer writing on the... They had a well in the middle of the farm, and he wrote the word Vigan on. This was the time when the generals and the Pétain, you know, there was confusion in the French. Incidentally, while we're in Frevent, we watched the French going up to the front, as it was then. And I can remember one man turning to me, he said, "By, they must have opened every museum in Paris. You have never seen such antiquated howitzers and guns going up to the front. All horse-drawn." And this was the preparedness of the French, and we weren't much better.
Did this have an effect on your morale?
Oh, the morale was terrible. Well, it didn't have an effect on because, you know, it was... Confusion reigned, and we were so ignorant of what was going on. We could see up miles up on the skyline at night, all this red glow, but we didn't know what it was, really. Well, never mind. It's the only time in my army career I put a bullet up the spout, as we say, and this banging on this huge farm door. You remember the old French farm, you know, these huge doors, and I was on guard duty at the time, and I remember the only time I ever put one up the spout. And when the doors opened, it was the daughter of the farmer, and I nearly shot her. You know, tension was mounting by then, you see. Next morning...
Were you trying to find your battalion? You were divorced from them, were you trying to find them?
Yeah, well, you know, we just wanted to know where we were. And of course, we had a young lieutenant with us who, quite frankly, you know, he was as bemused and lost as we were. So, never mind, we were up about 6 o'clock in the morning, and I remember the French, the young officer asked me, would I sit next to him? Because I could map read. And I also could speak French, you see, within reason. So there was a young lieutenant, myself, and the CSM, and all the boys on the back, and we all had totally hand grenades each.
You must have been pretty tightly packed.
Oh, you're telling me, you were hanging on to the place. That's why we dumped half the stuff. I mean, there may have been 15, 20, I can't remember that detail. But we left about, and through the night we could hear all this rumbling and noise going on, weren't we? We didn't take much notice of it. Early morning, going down this road, I saw this woman coming to us, and she was dressed in black. Now, nearly every other woman in France was dressed in black because of the casualties, and especially up in the Maginot Line, you see. So I remember jumping off this truck and going up to this woman and just saying, Bosch, I mean, were you les Bosch, you know, very poor French sort of thing. But she said there weren't any Bosch in the area, you see, because they use the word Bosch, you see. And I went back to the lieutenant and I said, oh, well, she says there are no Germans in the area. We went about a quarter of a mile and we were coming to this crossroad. And I remember seeing this chap leaning up against this farm wall with his rifle leaning at me and having a quiet smoke. And we didn't take much notice of him. We're just getting it was a slight incline up to this crossroad. And this fella suddenly stopped and looked at us and shouted, Englander! It's the first German I ever saw. And he was more surprised to see us because we were not. We were in the French sector. We should never have been there. We were completely lost. The young lieutenant, well, I don't know. I'm still here today, but we still think what he should have said to the driver was, put your foot down, and we could have lobbed a couple of hand grenades each and got confusion and off. But he told the driver to stop. Well, of course, once the carrier stopped, that was it. And before we knew it, we were surrounded. That was it. We were captured.
About what date? Did you take him?
It would be early June, late May, early June. And that was it. And I was captured in a little place called Barleycourt. Show you the confusion too here. I remember going through this town, well, it was a small town, large village of Beaumetz, and we were being strafed, you know, German bombers. And we were edging along this wall and we saw some Tommies on the other side of the street going the other way. And we kept shouting, where are you going? What regiment are you? And nobody knew where they were going. See, there was no definite line, there was no communication. We were completely lost. It was tragic.
Had you lost off the battalion during the day or during the night?
We just don't know, because I was captured about 6 o'clock in the morning, and I can remember they took us to this small farm. Now, this may sound melodramatic, but it is quite true. They lined us up against this wall, and they'd taken our truck and commandeered it, and they stuck this machine gun. If you've ever looked down the barrel of a machine gun, it's not a very nice experience. And I was only 21, confused, dirty, lost, hungry, you know. And this, I'm sure this German was enjoying himself because he kept tapping this gun on an arc, you know, and we were standing up against this wall, expecting to be shot. And it sounds melodramatic, but, I was absolutely, I was petrified.
What were your comrades like?
All the same. We were all young fellas, you know. It was terrible. And we were there about 3 hours, and they allowed the farmers to give us drinks of water. And, next to me, and caught with us, was a young fellow from Lincoln, and he was a dispatch rider. And funny, I remember this fellow, you talk about camaraderie. He's sitting next to me, I didn't know him from Adam. And he said, are you hungry? I'm famished, I don't know where I'd last eaten. And he had a tin of sardines. Funny how you remember these things. Three sardines, he shared them with me. I remember. And I never knew his name. And I met him later in prison camp. They called him Lincoln. And he'd been caught on his motorbike with a dispatch rider. About 9 o'clock, we saw this cloud of dust coming. It was the battalion, what was left of it.
They were being marched in by the Germans?
They had been caught by them the night before. And they spent the night in a church, actually. And this young fellow rushed up to me, and he put his arm around me. And I think his name was Curry. He lived in Sunderland. Oh, he said, Alan, he said, I thought you were dead. He said, I saw a fella lying there, and he said, he just looked like you. I said, well, I said, I feel like him, but I'm not dead. And what had happened, again, now, who am I to criticise? But apparently, whoever was in command of them had taken our boys into this cornfield. Well, of course, it was cover in one way, but they couldn't see the enemy either. And this is what was told me, so I can't corroborate this, but apparently the Germans just sent tanks in like reapers, and a lot of our fellows were killed by tank, the tracks, more than being shot.
Had this been close to where you were taken?
Oh, no, yes, very, and just up the road, really, but we were lost. And then, of course, we were all put together, and then they kept coming.
Was there any feelings of resentment against the officers who you would have thought would have done a better job?
No, we just hadn't time to think about that. It all happened so quickly. And we were hungry, tired, wet. It was terrible. And then, it was the end of the world. It's funny. I'd watched Cowboy film, and a chap said, hands up. It's a strange feeling when the Germans slip in your hand, put your hands up. You just wonder what's going to happen to you. And do you know what was in my mind at the time? It may seem very strange to you, but I still, this was about 7 o'clock in the morning by this time. I thought, there's my poor mother. She's getting up at home. My father's getting ready to school, go to school. And here am I, the end of the world. Would I ever see them again? These were all things that flashed through your mind. It's a terrible, terrible moment, especially at that early hour in the morning.
What was the initial response of the Germans to you when you were taken?
Well, they were very arrogant. They were they were victorious, and they knew they'd got us. And they were well organised. They knew what to do. As transport was given, I'll give you an example, they would put the French on these wagons, on these trucks, and they would drive past the Tommies and the Belgians, and that created resentment, you see. But then they would stop the French, put the Belgians on. But they never gave the Tommy. We had to walk the whole way. And they tried to play one set of people against the other. But the French, I've never seen as many French. There were millions of them. And, some of them were marching through their own towns, and you would suddenly see a Frenchman leave the ranks and go and fling his arm around his wife or his family or something, and then rejoin them. Very strange thing happened to me, actually. We were all very hungry, very tired. And I remember seeing this old lady shuffling along the road, and she bumped into me. It sounds a strange story again, but when I looked on the crook of my arm, there was a bag of sugar lumps. No, I couldn't have had anything better. I sucked them the whole way, 600 miles I marched into Germany, and that dear old woman would never know how much I'd blessed her. Drink. The Germans would kick buckets of water over. This sort of thing. Cigarettes. They would flick a cigarette dump down in Tommy's, because I didn't smoke, so it didn't worry me, but then they would stamp it out. These sort of little things sound trivial, but at the time...
This was in the initial stage?
Yes, yes. I was stopped in Combray. A terrible sight in Combray. I remember marching towards Combray. And I wondered what was wrong. And I remember, because we didn't know many, we were away from friends then, we were all a mixed lot. And the whole town was white. And the town had surrendered, and the French had put sheets out of their bedroom windows. It was a terrible sight to see. And I was stopped by three young Germans. I remember big, real, typical German, And they got a hold of me. And they said, it's a long way to Tipperary. I always remember this, Tommy. We're all Tommies. But it's a long way to Berlin on foot. I always remember them saying that to us. They really rubbed it in. Yes, and then booted me backside and put me back in there.
You'd get a look at the German soldiers who were obviously going along, what shape were they in?
Oh, well, they were obviously in, you know, again, this in retrospect, you can see now what happened, this blitzkrieg. They must have come a long way. They were just in, you know, they looked tired, but there was no doubt about it. They were well organized, well disciplined.
Was this a surprise? Had you been given a different picture before?
Well, you know, we were told about cardboard tanks and all this, that and the other, you know, but no doubt about it. We were a rabble and they were organized. I'm quite sure of that now. And I remember at the head of this column, I can see him yet, was an old major in the Royal West Kents. Funny, I remember the regiment. Man, he must have been 70 if he was there, or he looked it, and this German had a pistol at his head. And he said, if anybody escaped, the first man to be shot was this brutal fellow.